What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. Today we have a very special guest, one of our recurring guests joining back into the fold. It's none other than Matt Moderno of Believe in Wizards, of the underrated Believe in DMV Hoops. Every time Matt's on,
thanks, man.
Everyone talks about Believe in Wizards, but I'm a big fan of Believe in DMV Hoops. A lot of more local coverage that I really enjoy. So again, thanks for coming and joining me, Matt.
Oh, Greg, anytime you need something, man, I'm always here. I love the work that you do. I love you as a person, so I'm happy to be here. Thanks for thinking of me.
Yeah, of course. So what I want to first talk about is sort of your reaction to the lottery from Sunday. I mean, look, the Wizards had a pretty good chance to get the second overall pick, a pretty good chance to also fall to 5-6. And basically how the lottery works, like, they only draw for the first four teams. So after that, it goes reverse order. So anytime it deviates when they're calling out the lottery, that means that basically for the Wizards, that sucks. They want it to go the exact same way. And you see Utah supposed to get 8, drop up to 10. It means Atlanta and Houston are in the top 4, 2 spots remaining. Then you see Portland fall a spot. That means for the top 4, for the teams with the 4 worst records, there's only 1 spot remaining in the top 4. Charlotte gets 6. And then at 5, it's the Wizards or the Pistons. Whoever gets 5 basically gets fleeced and the other team gets into that top 4. What was your reaction when you saw them flip the Pistons at 5?
It was very similar to yours. So if anyone has not seen Greg's real-time reaction video, that was about what I was living through. It was a lot of just, oh man, this again. Oh man, these guys are going to jump us. Oh, we're screwed. And then when it kept not being us each time, there was like a sigh of relief, like, huh, oh my gosh, like, oh, okay, wait, maybe we've got a chance here. And then when I saw 2 come up, I was like, you know what, cool. I'm not greedy. I'm not bummed. Like, I was expecting worse. So 2 is like perfectly cool. And I think there's a world where like getting 2 in this draft might actually be better than getting 1. Maybe I'm rationalizing here a little bit, but like, the number one pick comes with this like weight of expectations for both the player and the organization. And, you know, of their last 2 number one picks, I'd say the Wizards are 1 for 2. So try pick a number 2 for a change, try something a little different, and hopefully it works out.
My reaction was pretty similar to yours, I'd say. Like, it could have been worse. You could have fallen to 5 or 6. And I thought the Wizards all week were going to get 5, so I'll take any number 2. But it's kind of like once they pull you along for the journey and like you're so close to getting 1, you want 1. But like you said, I kind of had to pull myself back to reality and let myself know that they could have fallen. I mean, if you can see, Matt mentioned the video that I posted, like my soul kind of like left my body when it was just like so deflating when I saw that the Wizards got 2. It's also annoying for a team like the Hawks that did it. Like they've mismanaged their assets so poorly, and for them to just get bailed out like this, it's annoying. And that's the new lottery system. I don't really like it. Certain teams aren't good enough to just sign LeBron James in free agency, and for you to let a team like the Hawks get bailed like that, I don't know if that's kind of what I like.
Yeah, I'm with you. There definitely is a little bit of like a gut punch associated with like, wait, this team that actually they didn't do the hard work of trying to be bad this year on purpose that we just lived through, like they kind of accidentally stumbled their way into it is a little bit deflating. But I don't know, like you said, expecting 4, 5, 6 all week, getting 2, I'm just trying to look at it in like the aggregate of like, okay, from a Wizards fan perspective, it's been worse, it could have been so much worse, so we'll take a little bit of decent good when we can get it.
Exactly. And after you, the dust settles and you sit there and you get the second pick, you can't just kind of be like, okay, nice, I got the second pick. You got to get right into it, because the combine was the next day in Chicago. Will Dawkins and Michael Winger both there. I'm sure Travis Schlenk and a bunch of Wizards scouts are there too, interviewing players, getting all the information they need. At number 2 right now, the report, I think it was from Mike Scotto, there's 9 players that the Wizards are considering it to, just because it's so wide open. I mean, you think about last year, it was pretty like, yeah, Wemby goes 1, and then if you're 2, you take Brandon Miller, maybe Scoot, but not really.
Right.
And then the draft starts at 3. Like, the Wizards have so many different options. I want to know, who are like, if you could narrow it down to 3 guys that you would want, considering, let's say Sar goes 1, you have 3 possible options at number 2. Who are those guys for you?
So I think the other thing here too is, one, I'm really glad to see them cast a wide net, because one, it may potentially mean that they're exploring other options for another, you know, later lottery pick. Or two, they're just saying, hey, we're starting the file on all these other guys early, and they may boomerang back around to us at some point later in their careers, and we will have had early intel and things like that. So you're not worrying about, like, oh, do we trade for this guy? Is he an a-hole? Like, oh, okay, no, we've interviewed him. We feel good about him. We've started the file. So I like just seeing that large list anyway. You just do your due diligence and don't be lazy. And I think there was some reporting from folks, you know, over the last administration that maybe they weren't as locked into the draft over the last last two general managers, basically, as you would want. So these guys being like, all right, we'll do all the homework you need us to do is encouraging. All right. So how many names did you want from me, Greg? Sorry. Two,
just
three.
Three. I mean, there's nine players they're considering. I want to know the three guys that you'd like them to look at.
I wouldn't take a center, so that would eliminate Klingon personally. I just think the floor is pretty high there, but the ceiling is pretty low, so it's just not what I would do with a number two pick personally. And there's some still inherent risk there. The Rob Dillingham, Reed Shepard things, I think there's enough warts there that would steer me away from a smaller guard like that. So that really leaves you with a lot of like the wing slash forward type players. Well, I guess guard wing forwards. Steph Castle from UConn, I think, is sort of my favorite choice of the group because I buy the defense immediately from day one. I think he's a really good ball mover. And I think there's a lot more there on offense. Again, there aren't many opportunities where like freshmen score 36 points between two Final Four games. You don't luck your way into that against two of the better defensive teams in the country. So he's got more there, and he stepped up when they needed him to and showed that there was kind of, you know, this other untapped potential. Zachary Risacher, the French forward, 6'8", 6'9", long 3-and-D guy at a minimum. So I think these guys, that their floors are valuable role players that are hard to get, but the ceiling, you know, if he continues to develop and work on his off, you know, on his on-ball creation skills and things like that, I feel really good about where he can go from here. And just from a guy like that, I'm more worried about the tools than I am like the raw percentages. I just don't think that particularly matters a lot. The Nikola Topic injury thing, I think you got to put some like real homework into. It sounds like this one he'll bounce back from pretty quickly, but two consecutive non-contact, you know, lower body injuries for any basketball player would be worrying. And it may not, you know, ultimately matter even if he needed a surgery or something, because he's not creating advantages based off his explosion or anything like that. But also, when you're not the most athletic guy, you may not be able to afford to lose what little athleticism you do have. I'm not saying he's like unathletic, but he's not a top, you know, one percenter kind of guy. So I think those are the three I would start with, though. How does that compare with your list overall, Greg?
It's pretty similar. I mean, I have Castle as my guy at number two. That's who I want. Just like you said, the defense is there, and I want this draft or this front office to find that identity of, and I feel like they want lanky wings, and they want defenders, and they want people that can also shoot the ball. And Stephon Castle is arguably the best perimeter defender in this class. I hate saying just the best pure defender, because it's unfair to guys like Klingon and Saar that are good rim protectors, something that Castle obviously
Ryan
can't do
Dunn
his size.
Or somebody like that.
Yeah.
You know, pretty good too.
But he's, I think he's the, it's safe to say he's the best perimeter defender in this class. You saw at the combine, he was second in the shooting drills. He's a competent shot creator.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate when people look at just his stats, because he was, at the beginning of the season, he was very raw and he wasn't doing much.
Right.
And then you saw him in the Final Four, he was almost the most outstanding player.
Mm-hmm.
If not for his teammates also being very good. Like, he was arguably the piece that kind of won it for UConn with how well he played in those two games.
Yep.
And I feel like that's going to translate. The thing is, he's saying he can be a point guard on that next level. And a lot of Wizards fans are like, well, we have Jordan Poole. When you're rebuilding, you don't draft for fit, you draft for best player available. And I think Stephon Castle is the best player available too. So I would be inclined to go there. I agree with you on Risacher as well. It's another guy that some Wizards fans don't like and some Wizards fans like. But you're betting on traits there. You're betting on upside. And my last guy is Ron Holland. And I'm curious to know what your thoughts on that, because I have Ben Pfeiffer on. I think Ben has Ron Holland at second on his list. I have Ron Holland at four. I'm betting, like I said, with Rhys Sachet on upside and potential. He's possibly the most freakish athlete in this draft class. He's a solid defender. It's just like his shot. His shot is, it was 24% from three for a guy that's going to be sitting on the wing. Can you live with that? And I don't know if you can.
Yeah, I mean, some of these guys, it's really subjective, and honestly, it's personal preference too, right? Like, I think he's a solid top 10 caliber prospect. It's just, I maybe don't buy his touch as much, so I'm not as worried about the raw percentages, but the soft-handedness that you want from some of these guys, I don't necessarily see. We've got a podcast coming out on Monday with Ryan Hammer, where we talk about this one in particular a pretty good amount, because he's also a big fan of Ron Holland. And I just kind of made the point in that one that for me, I've gotten kind of behind a lot of the G League Ignite guys and then not had them work out necessarily. So I think I'm a little skittish about just sort of like locking in too much on what the results or production or things you see from people in that development environment actually mean and translate to in the NBA. And the program wasn't around all that long before they just canceled it at the end of the season. So some of those guys, they may just have needed longer and they could still blossom into like elite level guys. But I think for the most part, they've been kind of wholly underwhelming. So I worry about Holland and Bouzelas from that perspective. I really liked Holland coming out of high school, but you know, you get into the like, well, was this a grown man against boys kind of thing? So I just would have loved to see him actually end up in Texas, because for me personally, that's easier to then do the mental math of, yeah, okay, this guy did this as a freshman in college. I know what that means at the NBA level. So I don't blame you for liking him. I couldn't get there personally.
Well, there's a reason that the Ignite League or the Ignite team is disbanded. Like, it, they've created some great prospects. I mean, Jalen Green is great. Scoot Henderson is pretty good. Like, he could be good. You don't really know, but there's also a lot of prospects. Like Leonard Miller, where you thought Leonard Miller would be very, very good. And then he went to Ignite and he was kind of a bit of an afterthought, and now he's in the G League with the Timberwolves. Like, there's a reason that the Ignite thing has disbanded, and that's been my biggest hold off on Holland, because I prefer when guys go to college. I feel like it's easier to evaluate. It's even when guys go overseas, like Bobby Clinton, when he goes overseas, it's hard to gauge against that type of talent. Even LaMelo Ball, yeah, he's very good in Australia, but you just don't know. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And I guess that's why GMs get paid the way they do. But we're pretty similar in terms of the top three. I want to, you kind of mentioned it a little bit, but like, who are, if any, do you want to avoid at that number two spot? There's got to be some guys that you really don't want the Wiz to take.
Yeah, like anyone who listens to our show, I had such a great time going to Brooklyn this year for the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament. And it was really nice to see Klingon and Castle in person, because I just think you get a better feel for what a guy's all about. And Klingon is gigantic, like absolutely huge. I just personally, like a team building philosophy thing, would never take a center that I didn't think could project to be like a top 10 player in the league with a pick that early, even in a weaker draft. It's, if you're like, not to like lazy stereotype, but like if your prime outlook is somewhere along the lines of like Walker Kessler, that's a good player, but is that ceiling high enough to justify a number two pick? It's also had some foot injuries and things like that, non-contact related stuff for a guy that big. You know, that's interesting. So I would be a little nervous about that. You know, if you fully vetted it medical wise, maybe that's okay. It's just not where I would go personally. I'm tired of seeing kind of small one way only guards for the Wizards. So I don't think Rob Dillingham will ever be anything more than like a neutral defender at best. So I'd go away from that. Like, I don't think Nikola Topic will ever be anything better than neutral defender at best, but he's at least big. So he's a little harder to hunt in switches and things like that. Whereas, you know, Dillingham's small, and I think that's tough. I think Reed Sheppard is a really nice player. I just can't get there at number two. Kind of don't really fully get the modest Bouzelas thing so far. It's sort of like a knuckleball-y side-loaded jump shot, and that's supposed to be one of his bigger attributes, is like stretch forward potential. So I just think he's kind of limited personally in where I think he could get to ceiling wise, but I'll say that now and he'll end up being like, you know, an NBA all-star for the
Yeah.
next decade or something. But those are the guys I don't actually dislike any of them. Like, I think there's a lot of like 2 through 15 kind of guys I could really get into. It's just not people I would want the Wizards to take.
I'm right there with you, and like you said, and I think what we are kind of similar with is defense, and that's kind of what separates the guys at our top of the top of our boards from the other guys. Like they're all pretty similar. They're often some have better offense than others, but that doesn't mean they're necessarily liabilities. The big difference maker for me is defense, and like you said, I'm avoiding Reed Sheppard. I think he's gonna be great, but he's what is he six? Is he 6'1"?
Yeah, one and some change, I think, is how he measured out.
He's not big enough. I think he could be a good point guard, but I don't want to draft a point guard that can't play defense. And it's not saying he isn't a good defender, it's just he's too small. We've seen it all the time. Like, just because you're a good defender in the league doesn't mean that you're going to be great at defense. You're going to get hunted in the pick and roll all the time. And I think that's a guy that's going to be put into switches. They're going to hunt him on defense. The same thing with Dillingham. I get too many like quickly vibes, but without the defense from Dillingham, like lanky guard, very good gifted scorer, but I don't know if the defense will ever be on that level. So I'm avoiding Dillingham. I'm also there with Klingon. I like him as a prospect. I had him at 4 on my big board a couple weeks ago. He's down to like 6 now, but again, you don't want to take a Walker Kessler second overall. I'll take him at 10. But I don't want him there. And then the guy that I have that I don't think you had was Cody Williams. And this is a guy that like he could be very good, but he's very, very far away. And I like the upside of some other prospects over him. And also a lot of these guys might be better right now than some of the guys Matt and I have at the top, but Will Dawkins, something he said was we're gonna draft guys that are gonna be the best in 3 to 4 years, not the guys that are the best
Yeah,
right
exactly.
now. And that's a quote that really resonated with me, and it's something that I really liked, like that he said. Like they're not drafting guys that can like Klingon that are gonna be pretty good in the league. They're drafting guys like Chris Hache that might be really good in a couple years, and that's kind of why I've structured the board for the Wizards the way I have.
And I do think it's a little silly where a few people were like, oh, well, Klingon, you know, his vertical jump was only this. It was 2 inches low. Like, it doesn't matter. The guy's huge. He blocks out the sun. His standing reach is ridiculous. So whether, you know, it's 9'8" standing reach or 9'6", like it ultimately doesn't really matter. People were like genuinely terrified to take the ball at him in the paint. And I think that probably will continue in the NBA once he gets a little stronger. He's got kind of that higher waist, so maybe he gets pushed around a little bit from a leverage standpoint, but he's still going to be hard to shoot over. It's just, if you have a guy like that and you've invested that in him, you've basically locked yourself into playing one way of defense. So you are now a drop coverage scheme team. And I think limiting yourself makes it a little tough. We're seeing that a little bit now with Minnesota of just like, as good as Gobert is, there are still certain times where there's a reason why people ask the question of like, oh, are they better with just Naz Reid in there sometimes? Like, you have to be able to give teams different looks. And when one of your key guys is a drop coverage only big, there's just only so much you get out of that. So it's just same thing with the 6'1" guards. Like, you have to build your team very specifically around that. And when they need so many pieces, I don't know that they can afford to like sort of like narrow their window of flexibility there.
And you mentioned Klingon. Are you buying the shooting? Are you buying his shot at the combine?
I mean, I went to a game one time actually while Dwight Howard's with the Wizards, and he hit like 17 consecutive threes. I don't know that I ever saw him hit an one in an NBA game. So I think Klingon actually has like decent touch. If he was a decent shooter at some point, it wouldn't really surprise me. I remember when the Wizards were working out Mark Williams, there was that video of his kind of janky jump shot, but a bunch of them went in. And everyone was like, oh, now that Mark Williams is a stretch big, like, should we take him at 10? And I don't know, ultimately they probably should have taken him at
Probably
10,
should have,
but
yeah.
it was still one of those things where I was like, all right, I don't think Mark Williams has hit a single NBA three-pointer.
No.
So I wouldn't read too much into that personally, but it's better than the alternative. I'd rather see him make a bunch of open threes than clank a bunch, but it doesn't mean all that much ultimately.
I mean, I'm right there with you with Klingon. It's the same thing with Shepard. Like, all these guys are going to be like solid, but it's you're at two. You pretty much have the power of choice. Let's take a guy that can play defense instead of a guy that's one way, and that's just kind of, I feel like, where we're both at here. And a lot of talk's been about number two, but the Wizards also acquired another first
Greg,
round
can I throw
pick.
in one more thing real quick? Sorry, before
Yeah,
we
go ahead.
pivot. So, this is just something I was kind of thinking about a little bit too. These guys where everyone's worried about the offense, like, I don't think it's ever been easier to score in the NBA. And you have all this space. So, even a limited offensive player, I mean, as long as you're not going to, like, sorry to for him to catch a stray here, but as long as you're not going to have, like, a Johnny Davis, like,
I know it.
breakdown, like, you know, it's pretty easy. Like, this is a reason I actually kind of missed on someone like a Scottie Barnes, is because I was like, well, you know, how does he ever average more than like 14 points a game? And it's like, it doesn't matter if you have a good feel for the game and things like that, and you're gonna be able to put up points. So I just wouldn't let that be the total discriminator, as long as you think a guy has at least like a pathway to being a productive offensive player.
Well said. I echo exactly what Matt said, and it's yet another reason why I'm targeting pure defenders over pure scorers at the top of the draft. But like I was saying, obviously we're top heavy in our discussions. The number two pick's more important than the number 26 pick, but the number 26 pick's still important. And looking back on that Daniel Gafford trade to get it, it seems like a win-win scenario because Gafford was the Wizards' plans for the rebuild. And it opened up more minutes for other guys. And if you draft big, it opens up more minutes for them. And look at Dallas. They are one game away from the conference finals. I'm very happy for Gaff, but now the Wizards have that 26th pick. And there's a bunch of people. I mean, this draft is so random and weird. Like, there's guys that could be, I could think, are going to be there at 26. They could go 15. They could go top 10. And there's also guys that could go 51st that we thought wouldn't be there at 26. Like, it's a very weird draft. For me, I got best about four guys that I'm kind of locked in on. I don't know if they're gonna be there, but I like these guys, the pick. But before I do that, are there certain guys you're targeting around that range?
Yeah, I think you nailed it absolutely there with the like the range is so hard to speculate for this draft. And I think it all takes is one GM to be like, you know what? I have that guy 11, and everyone else in the league has him at 28. Like, I think it could be that kind of year. So I wouldn't just like rule guys out. And hopefully that's a thought process that Dawkins and company are taking too, of just like, these are the guys we've targeted, you know, consensus be damned. But someone like a Daron Holmes out of Dayton, I think, is a really interesting two-way mobile big. I don't know that you'd want him to be like your long-term starting center because maybe he's a little on the slighter side.
Yeah,
But
do you think he could play center, or do you think he's a
yeah,
forward?
I think he definitely can. You know, it's gonna be sort of massive dependent. I would bet if you put him side by side with Gafford, they're actually probably, you know, relatively around the same general size there, give or take. But it's you know, he's probably not like this perfect starting center in the long term, but he'd be a good serviceable like option and rotation guy, and getting that's not a bad thing. I really like Ryan Dunn out of Virginia. I just do. It's just cool to watch a guy like this is kind of the way I felt about watching Castle of in person. It was just like guys were literally picking up their dribble when he was like,
Defense.
yeah, and Dunn is maybe the other guy that's maybe the other best potential perimeter defender, although he can kind of guard more areas of the court just given his size. So he's probably like a center offensively right now, but same kind of thing. He's gonna cut. That Virginia system is weird. We saw somebody like a Trey Murphy kind of really show off a lot more of their versatility when they got to the range, or got to the range, got to the league. I don't think that Ryan Dunn will have that same kind of range that a Trey Murphy does, but he's got like decent touch. It's just the when he shoots it, it's like from a different release point every time, and like sometimes it's on his way up, sometimes it's way on his way down. I think those things are easier to fix as long as you have some basis for touch. So just taking another guy that can fit into that, like we are now a defensive team. Like if the Wizards are going to be bad and lose a lot of games next year, I'd rather it because they couldn't score enough points for a change. And that's just what I'm sick of watching is like the 149 to 147 losses and
Yeah, I'm there
that
with
sort of
you.
thing. Jalen Tyson out of Cal, I think is really interesting. Started at Texas, ended up at Texas Tech. We've seen him be like a 3-and-D wing role player. And then this year at Cal, he got to be like prime offensive initiator hub type guy. I think he's literally the kind of guy that if he was like starting on the Denver Nuggets in the playoffs in like 2 years, we'd all be like, oh, how did we miss on this guy? So if you can steal a guy like that, you know, in the 26 range, I think that would be like a really interesting move.
All those guys are right there. I talked about with Ben Pfeiffer, Jalen Tyson, because I also really like his game. For me, this is I'm gonna say this first, just because this is a guy that I've seen at the combine that he was on my radar, but has kind of moved a little bit up my board. That's Khalil Ware from Indiana, and obviously I go to Penn State, so we play them twice a year. He kills. I mean, Penn State has no bigs. Khalil Ware is just dominant. I
You don't
like.
like Cutis Wahab? Come on, Greg.
No. There's a reason he's transferred pretty much every year of his career. Khalil Ware, I don't know if he's a true center. I think he could play power forward. I think he could maybe play center, but I like his instincts on defense in terms of rim protection. He seems to always be in the right spot. Offensively, he's got a post game, and we don't really see that too much in college, but it's not too far off from where I would like it to eventually be. And I kind of just like the way he roams the court on defense. I like the athleticism. I think he was one of the top jumpers. He might have the top vertical leap. Like you said, I don't like buying too much stock into certain numbers like that, but it does show on the
Yeah,
court.
you'd rather see it than not, for
Yeah,
sure.
so I would like him in that range, especially considering, look, you don't want to draft for fit, but I wouldn't mind adding another big into the fold. So I would have him at the top. I don't know. Is Johnny Furphy staying in the draft?
Yeah, I think
Yeah.
Bill Self is talking about him being locked in at this point. And so I
Yeah.
really want to hear where you go with this one, because I think this will be the first one where we're like kind of different on.
Yeah, so here's the thing. I don't want to take a guy that's one-dimensional, and I think Johnny Furphy is a shooter with size and nothing more than that. But his shot and his jump shot is pro ready. And I really like that trait about him. The only thing that would kind of take that away is, can he defend? And is it just going to be a like a JJ Redick where, okay, yeah, you're a great shooter, you have size, but you can't defend, and I can't play you at certain points. And I don't know if you're gonna differ on that. That's probably the main spot.
I watched a lot of Kansas because I'm sneaky a Kansas basketball fan, which I don't advertise too much as a Maryland alum, but shout out Drew Gooden. That's when I started getting into those teams. But he just did dumb shit like a lot of times. And I get that you're a freshman and the tools are really good. I just didn't enjoy him playing basketball. And for this guy that's like this elite shooter, he's like 35% on four attempts, and like the free throw percentage is fine, it's like mid 70s. So, you know, I like 1-to-1 assist to turnover ratio, and just like the situational stuff. Like, he got punked in their tournament game, and that would just scare me a little bit at 26. Like, I'm take him, and I'll never question it or feel bad about it. It wouldn't be like my first choice personally.
No, I mean, everything you said is all the reasons that I've tried to talk myself out of it. It's just like I'm banking on upside here, and I think
Yeah,
he's
big dudes that can shoot is a good
one
thing.
of the more upside players. So I got him. And then the guy that I've been targeting the entire time is Tristan Da Silva. I thought he was gonna enter last year. He's been one of my favorite prospects for a while out of Colorado. I like guys with size that can space the floor, and he's not a knockdown 3-point shooter, but he can make a three if you need him to. And he's a great, I think he needs to improve a little bit laterally on defense, but I do genuinely like what I see from him on that end. And I just think he's a complete player that can kind of do it all, and someone that the Wizards could plug in next year, and have him play meaningful minutes. He seems like he's not going to project to be an all-star or anything, but a good glue guy that you would want on this team. And then after Da Silva, I want to get your thoughts on this guy, because he's been flying up draft boards since the combine. I'm pretty sure it's Durasic, Nikola Durasic. I think that's how you say his name.
It's like a J sound, so I think the
Yeah,
D is sound.
something like
So
that.
Jurisic,
Durasic,
yeah.
what are you buying into to all the hype?
I can't like comment honestly. Like I would feel kind of like a fraud if I talked about him, because I've only seen like highlight reel stuff. I like when I watched him play with Nikola Topic, I wasn't watching for him at all. So, I mean, he's a big dude who theoretically has some skill and things like that. So, if that's who they want to take at 26, like I would not be mad at it at all. This, like, we looked really good in a few highlight reels from the combine. So, people who didn't think he was worth a first round pick now have him around 20 is kind of weird to me personally, but not a great athlete. So, he's just kind of like a 6'8" shooter. I had seen some of him earlier in his professional career because he's been a guy that each of the last 3 years they've talked about, is this the year he comes out? And from all accounts, like he hasn't gotten like markedly better at any of those kinds of things he wasn't that great at. So I'd be a little scared. I think sometimes the newness is like exciting to people. So he's new to people that weren't doing like draft psycho stuff the last couple of years where they were like looking for guys in the 60s. But it would make me a little nervous, I would say.
That's fair. I mean, I'm right there. I don't know much about him, but I know a lot of Wizards fans want him at 26.
Right.
If they want to take a flyer on him, sure. I think there's better prospects to be had at 26. But I guess I trust Will Dawkins here. Now we talk about number two. We talk about number two a lot more than 26, and a lot of people forget that the Wizards should have had the 32nd pick in this draft. I'm pretty sure it was involved in some way in the Westbrook trade. I don't know how we lost that pick, but Tommy Shepard lost it. So the Wizards' second round pick is from Phoenix this year. It's at 51. You don't have to give because I don't. It's hard to project to 51 just because you have no idea who's going to be there. Is there a guy that you're hoping kind of still is on the board at that spot that you're really high on?
This is kind of where I actually like this draft. Like, I typically have more fun with the guys in this
I
range
was going to say,
anyway.
yeah.
So that's always exciting. It's just this year, I think there's like some dudes. And you mentioned Tristan Da Silva, like even one of his teammates. You look at KJ Simpson, who's a 6 foot basically shooting guard, but he shoots the absolute shit out of it. And I think that would be kind of interesting. Like he's maybe a more of a win now team two-way kind of guy. But there's some dudes. I'll give you a couple names here if that's cool. These are guys that I didn't mention on my pod, but I would love to see that they brought in Nafali Dante from Oregon. Teams were like,
Athletic.
yeah, he's a big dude, and they were so much better when he played basketball for them. And the reason they underachieved for some of this year is that he was hurt. And you saw them get to a second round like slugfest with Creighton, who was a really good team, and he had a large amount to do with that impact of sort of neutralizing like the Ryan Kalkbrenner type guys. And I don't know how he necessarily translates directly to an NBA game because there's not much offensive there, but he's just a big dude who like blocks the rim really well and rebounds well. And I think that's a skill. Adama Ball out of Santa Clara is a really interesting guy. He transferred after a year at Arizona and just like a switchable wing. In each of the last two drafts, you had a Santa Clara wing that overachieved for people in Jalen Williams, and then last year in Brandon Pajemski. And Ball was kind of that guy this year to a lesser extent, but I think they played him sort of out of position. Like he brought their ball up every time as a 6'6" wing without like a tight handle, and they also didn't have like a ton of help. So I think he's really interesting. Baba Miller is a Spanish player that played at Florida State who's just sort of been like on draft boards for forever. And every year he gets a little lower because he never seems to get a little better. But I wouldn't totally give up on that. And he's a high upside guy at that part of the draft. Somebody like a Cam Spencer, I just want to root for a dude like that. And then the last one, like I can't quit this guy. It's Naquan Tomlin, now out of Memphis, technically. He was Kansas State before
Kansas
that,
State.
but yeah, it's a dude who didn't play basketball on an organized team until he was like 18 years old, which is crazy. And now he was a pretty darn productive college player. He's a big, switchable forward center type with some handles. So I think those guys would all be intriguing at that part of the draft.
Yeah, Tomlin's been dominating the combine scrimmages. I've seen him balling out, so
He just
I wouldn't
hoops in
mind
an
that.
unstructured setting like that too.
Yeah. I mean, for me, you mentioned Bobby Miller from FSU. For me, it's his teammate Jameer Watkins.
Yeah, as well.
I love Jameer Watkins. I watched a bunch of Florida State games. Don't ask why, it was always on. But there was a game against Clemson. I think it was his best game of the season. Or it might have been against Syracuse, but he was so good on both ends of the floor. And he's a guy I really like. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask, because there's two prospects that I think are very polarizing. Well, one's a little bit different than the other, but I gotta get your thoughts on Edie. And I also gotta get your thoughts on Bronny James. So what are your thoughts first on Zach Edie?
Yeah, I mean, just maybe starting with Edie, I guess I just can't get there personally. I think he's really good. I have like a half dozen tweets this year from, if you think he's productive just because he's big, you're crazy. To play that many minutes, to be that well conditioned at that size, to move the way he does at that size, to have the touch he has at that size is pretty incredible. It's just from some of the same concerns I would have about a Klingon, I have about Edie even to a greater extent, because I think Edie was more of a deterrent from because of his size than a natural like rim protector, if that makes sense. And I just don't know how he scores at the NBA level. I don't mind having like a change of pace third big that can come in and get some post-ups and things like that, and he'll run the floor hard, and that's all well and good. So if I had like the 34th pick in the draft and I knew I was drafting a third center, like, cool, I would not mind that. If I'm the Wizards on a rebuilding team, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me personally.
Yeah, and to add to that real quick, I feel like a lot of times people don't understand how different the college game can be from the pros. Like, yeah, Zach Edey won back-to-back player of the years, and they made, a run this year in the tournament. But I mean, if you look at a guy like Luka Garza, who was I think is pretty similar. Like, Luka Garza dominated college basketball for a 2-year span, won back-to-back player of the years, unguardable in the post. But everyone kind of knew, like, yeah, this guy is probably not going to be that great in the NBA. I'm pretty sure. I don't know if he got drafted. If he did, it was very late in the 50s. I think very late in the 50s. But he's been bounced around. He's been a G League player, and now he's like the 14th man on the Timberwolves. Like, NBA scouts kind of know what guys and what builds won't be that good. And I think Zach Edey projects into that. And I like what you said about, he's not just good because he's big. Like, he's very skilled around the rim. He's gotten a lot better with his footwork. He's gotten a lot better with his conditioning, but I don't think it's going to project. I think of him in the same light as I did Luka Garza.
He's another guy that came late to basketball too. He was actually, despite being Canadian, you think hockey, but he's actually a baseball player. And I think he's somebody that could actually still get better. And he's got enough touch that if you told me he ended up a shooter, I also wouldn't really be surprised. It's another one of those things. You can never give him heavy minutes because you've locked yourself into one particular style of play again. And oh, he's just Boban dismissiveness, I don't think is necessarily fair, but it's hard to make that work. So if I were OKC or somebody like that, and I had a pick in the late 20s, like, and I just needed like a big bulky guy to eat some minutes up, and he was never going to be like a core long-term piece for me, like, cool. Like, absolutely, it makes some sense. Go for it. Other one, Bronny James. Yeah, I mean, I actually do think he's probably like a fringe NBA player, like not right now, but getting a guy like that early is not the worst thing in the world. What do you measure, like 6'1" and some change? That's not ideal for a two guard. He's not a point guard. I don't know where that kind of came from, but he's a really kind of savvy connector, transition player, good defender. Seems like he's shooting the ball well in the combine. I didn't necessarily see that in limited sample size at USC this year, but I mean, hey man, like if you think he could be like Gary Payton the second or something like that, like just a dude who can lock in and understand the game really well. He's got the pedigree and he's athletic enough to just like pester people. He's probably a rotation player in the league for a long time and he's going to get every opportunity to prove it. So I don't think that's necessarily a bad pick if somebody wants to take a shot in the 50s or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't mind him at 51 if the Wizards decided, let's take a flyer on him, see what he's got. Projects as at least a decent defender.
Sure.
And hopefully some guy that can knock down three. So again, I wouldn't mind him at 51. Like Matt said, Matt's got like five guys he likes at 51. I have like five guys I like at 51. They're different, and I wouldn't mind any of them.
Yeah,
So
same.
I really don't think they can go wrong here at 51. But that draft stuff. The Wizards have three picks. They could add more though. There's a lot of trade scenarios to where Washington can add more picks. There's, if I'm being honest, there's probably 8 to 9, I say 6 to 7 maybe teams that have been rumored to want to trade out of their lottery picks, out of their first round picks, because they simply, it's not a good draft. They also don't feel like they want to use those players in the lottery over proven starters like a Kyle Kuzma, who I think the Wizards should be shopping around right now. But right now, I think Memphis at 9 is a team that wants to move up or move out. Sacramento at 13, rumored to want to move. Miami at 15, Philly at 16, Phoenix at 22 definitely wants to trade out, and the Knicks at 24, a team that's been rumored to trade out. There's a bunch of different trade packages, and I proposed this one on my last pod. But this one is more so for the Spurs pick, because they have 4 and 8, and I understand that a lot of people don't want to move Kuz, and a lot of people don't want to move too, but this is the trade that I propose, and I kind of want to get your thoughts. Okay, so the Spurs get the second overall pick and Kyle Kuzma from the Wizards. In turn, the Wizards get the fourth pick, the eighth pick, the 35th pick, Zach Collins to make salaries work, and a second round pick in next year's draft. Thoughts?
I just, even in a weak draft, I think I would prioritize the second pick. Like there's a big enough gap between 2 and 4. If it was like 4 and 6, like that's not quite the same to me, but something about 2, it's hard to trade out of unless you're, getting like a haul for it. And I think the value for someone like Kuzma is actually going to get better later into his contract. So I think I would definitely consider it. I mean, the Wizards should consider trading Zach Leontis if, if it improves the team. But it's just one of those things where, like, I don't think I could ultimately pull the trigger on that one per se, but I like the thinking. I like where your head's at, and it's absolutely a call they should be making to other teams and finding out what the range really is. Maybe I'm overinflating what I think Kuzma can get back, but he's just another one of those things. I don't think you have to rush, regardless of who you pick. I keep seeing a lot of like, and I'm sure you've seen it too, like, well, if they draft another wing, they have to trade Kuzma day one. It's like, well,
No, they
why?
don't.
Like, what's the urgency? So that's where I'm at.
Yeah, and that's a fair thought process. The way I broke it down, it was, would I trade Kyle Kuzma for Zach Collins and the 8th overall pick? In any other draft, maybe. But in this draft class, it's kind of hard for me to rationalize doing that, because the 8th overall pick isn't what it usually is. And then, like, would I trade the second pick to move back to 4, but pick up basically two extra second round picks? I don't value second round picks like that, so I don't
Same.
know if I'm inclined to make that move. So this is kind of a no-show for me. And it gets a little tricky with Kuz, like you said, that contract is so valuable. He's going to be making less than $20 million eventually on that deal. I think, like you said, you wait a little bit, you hold out on it to get the maximum value. And I think a team like the King, it just, when you are in for Siakam and you don't get him, and then the Pacers make a run like they are, when you're in for OG, you don't get him, the Knicks are making a similar run, and you're sat there not making the playoffs, like, your roster is not good enough, and you have to do something. You've like Kyle Kuzma, like, there's a lot of these desperate teams, even like a team like Houston that needs vets, and they have these picks. What, you don't need these picks anymore. You're trying to win now, so you might as well trade them for something. So I think, like Matt said, you can extract a little bit more value for Kuz. And that's kind of where I was at with this move. But Bleacher Report proposed another move today, and I want to get your thoughts on that as well. This is a move, so the Wizards, if they really like Alex Saar above all else, and they think moving additional draft capital is smart for them, this is the move they'd make. The Wizards get the first pick from the Hawks to move back. So the Hawks, in turn, get a second pick, pick 26 and Chicago's second round pick the following year. So the Wizards essentially are giving up the 26th pick and an additional second round pick to move up one spot and take Alex Saar. Is Saar that intriguing to you to make that move?
Not to me personally, but if I'm fully supportive of, if you're sure that's your guy, do what you got to do to get him. And, you know, that's
saw
sort
that
of
last
like,
year.
Yeah, we saw that last year. And like last year, you know, 2 second round picks, like you said, is nothing. You can throw $1 million in a fax machine into the trade and get 2 second round picks back. Like, so that's not that steep a price. If it had been another late first round pick, but they were like, Coulibaly is our dude, we have to get him, I'd have been supportive of that too. So if they feel that way about Saar, like, do what you got to do. I think there's enough question marks there with him and all these other guys that I'm kind of maybe not there that he's worth all that, but you know, they know better than me. So I would not give them a hard time if that's what they said the cost was to move up and get your guy. Like, I'll never give a team a hard time for that. I think I was on the short list of a fans that like didn't crush Minnesota for trading all those things to get Gobert. But if that's what it takes to get the deal done, and that's how you see your team, and that's the piece you need, then, you know, do what you got to do.
Yeah. I mean, I'm right there with you. This is the thing about this is if Atlanta is considering making this, or the Atlanta would make this move, let's say they offer it,
sure,
they clearly don't covet Saar like that. And yeah. I honestly, when Atlanta's paying Capella all that money, they have a Kongwu, like,
mm-hmm.
they don't necessarily need the center, and you'll know a lot closer to the draft, depending on if they trade Trae Young, if they trade Murray,
right,
what their direction is. But like, if they still have Trae Young by the draft, why would you take Alex Saar? It doesn't make sense, and I don't know if I lock him in here. So yes, Alex Saar I think is the best prospect, and pretty much consensus now.
Yep.
But that doesn't necessarily mean, because Atlanta doesn't deserve to be at one. They don't deserve to have this pick, and they don't necessarily have a need for it. So a guy like Risa Shea, even a guy like Stephon Castle, kind of makes more sense if they're going to stick it out with this current core. And I'm not too if Atlanta's considering this offer, I'd rather just sit it too and say I'm calling your bluff. Like, if you don't want Alex Saar, I'll take him. Take Risa Shea at one.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't want Risa Shea at one, fine. Take Alex Saar, and I'll take Risa Shea at two. I don't think he's that much higher than everyone else in this class to where I'm moving up. And I also think the Wizards need as many darts to throw at the board as possible. They need as many picks. And although it's a weak class, like, the 26th pick isn't just a throwaway. Like, that's a solid player. And I'll take
it's
whoever
Daniel
falls.
Gafford. I mean, like, you know, like it's
the same thing.
Piece.
And I hate when people say that second round picks don't matter. Like, I don't think they're as valuable in terms of trades. Like, you'll see people like, oh, well, we'll trade you for Denny, but we'll give you like 4 second round picks. Like, that'll move the needle. No, but you also can't just throw them away like they're nothing. You know, they could be something. And for a team like the Wizards, when you're in a small market, you got to maximize that.
You're an asset starved team. So if you do this, you better be damn sure that he's the guy for you. And it really just depends on how they value him. If he's a Jaren Jackson type impact player, is that really enough for you to do that? And are you sure there's a big enough gap between him and these other guys? Like, so you kind of have to get that one right. When you start with such a limited deck, like, you have to make the most of your opportunities. So you can only call in so many of those things. So if you give up some of the war chest here, it's just be very certain. This is not a particularly forgiving fan base, as we know, and rightfully so. We've had plenty of reasons to be skeptical of the moves they make. So if you're the front office, like, you're going to take a lot of grief if you take a guy and he doesn't pan out and you give up a lot of extra to get him.
Yeah. So that's kind of the last of the trades. If I just ask you right now, last thing, you're on the clock at two. Alex Saar just went number one. Who are you taking?
We're on the clock at two. Saar went one. I think I would still go Castle personally. I think that's just the guy I kind of like the most. And I'm at the point where if I don't know, I'd rather just them take the guy I think I would enjoy rooting for the most. But, you know, Risa Shea is still interesting. I can get behind any of them. I do trust this front office's ability to draft people and evaluate talent. So, you know, there are guys I'd like to see personally that we talked about here, but if they come in and they're like, look, Reed Sheppard is our guy, Matis Muzelis is our guy, I'm like, cool, I'm gonna go back and look and see what it would, you know, the summer league flights look like to get out to Vegas and see if I want to go or not. So either way, I think they're gonna do their homework. They're gonna be in good shape. This is not a lip service thing, you know, where they say they're doing their due diligence, but they're not. I won't be the whoever's top on the ESPN best available board, you know. So it's, I would go Castle, but I'm not mad at it no matter what they go with. So I know we're on the same page on that.
I mean, I like what you said there. Like, you trust this front office. They've done a very good job in 1 year in terms of managing assets, trading away guys, bringing in different guys that you might not expect, but they're like, these are the guys at the top of our board, and our board is what matters to us, not what Jonathan Givony thinks or Wasserman thinks. Like, they have their guy, and you saw that with Bilal last year. And like Matt said, I fully support this front office. Even if they take one of the guys that I said I don't want to take, I mean, in an instant, I'd flip a switch and be like, oh, this guy's great. Like, yeah. I'm fully supporting him. So with that being said, that's going to do it for this episode. Appreciate you, as always, for coming on, Matt. Let the people know where they can find you.
Believe in Wizards, me and Jihadi White, Bolts Forever. Greg and I both put up a lot of stuff there. So hopefully folks are following along with us. And just, again, Greg, I say this every time, but you're killing it, man. Appreciate you. When you're on First Take one of these days, don't forget us little people here in DC, okay?
Yeah, and I mean, you're too nice, obviously. And I said this at the beginning of the episode. I said, make sure you listen, obviously, to Matt Jihadi on Believe in Wizards as well. Make sure you tune into DMV Hoops, because it's great local content about everything you want to know about DMV basketball. So definitely find Matt on those. Follow him on Twitter. He's a great follow there. And again, appreciate you for coming on. It's going to do it for this episode. Go Wiz.